Welcome to Alarion, a realm shaped by shattered ages and rising legends, part of StoryOmniverse.com. This tale is titled The Ledger of Thornhall Grove. The winds of magic stir, the dragons awaken, and the story begins. Chapter 1. Ink Under Green Lanterns. 61 AE, Late Spring, Thornhall Grove. Green lanterns hung from living boughs, each one a jar of glow moths cradled in woven vine. Their light made every leaf look like it was listening, as if the grove itself leaned closer to catch a rumor. Archdruid Fen Mossbark waited beneath the heartroot arch, antlers threaded with moss and tiny blossoms. When he spoke, it was soft, but the grove quieted like it feared to interrupt. "Ledger Keeper Leo," he said, using my circle title as if it weighed more than my name. "I need your ink." "My ink?" I set my satchel down. The leather felt damp from the forest's breath. I had come expecting a summons, not a plea. "You're witnessing," he corrected. "Hunters vanish, not slain, not found, and the trees repeat their last words." Kara Windshade stood a step behind him, arms folded, cloak pinned with a thorn-shaped clasp. Her face was calm in the way a lake is calm before a storm. "It is a pattern," she said, "and patterns are made." "Made by whom?" I asked. Fen's dark eyes held mine. "That is why you will write. Panic grows faster than truth. If we do not have a record, rumor will become law." A gust moved through the lanterns, the glow moths swirled, and for a moment the air smelled like crushed fern and old sap. I thought of taverns and hearth circles, of how a single line sung too boldly could turn a neighbor into a monster by morning. My diary was meant for song later, shaped into a lay with a refrain the grove could carry, but first it had to be true. Kara's voice lowered. "The missing spoke strange things before they vanished, words that do not belong to them." "Show me," I said, and regretted how eager I sounded. I was young enough to want a tale with a villain, old enough to know that villains were often neighbors, and that the worst ones wore familiar faces. We walked the lantern walk, where the path was kept clear by woven roots that lifted stones aside. As we passed, I heard it, a whisper from the bark of a birch, thin as spider silk, cold in my teeth. I stopped so fast Kara nearly collided with me. "Did you hear that?" She did not answer at once. Her eyes tracked the trunk as if reading rings. "I hear many things," she said finally, "but that voice is not the birch." Fen's hooves pressed into the loam. "Write what you heard, Leo." "Exactly, even if it shames us." I opened my diary under the green lanterns and in the margin marked a small note for later. "Keep the line plain. No flourish. Let the chill do the work." My hands shook anyway. Ink bled into the page like a bruise. Chapter 2. The Thorn Spine Clue. 62 AE. 2 days later. Rootcaller Brannock's den smelled of honey salve and ironwood smoke. The rootcaller himself filled the doorway like a boulder with fur, shoulders wrapped in a bark-plated mantle. In his presence, even my thoughts tried to stand straighter. "Quick," he grunted, and waved us in, "before he wakes and tries to bite someone." On the pallet lay a patrol warden from the grove's edge routes, lean and gray-cloaked, breath shallow. Along his forearms and throat, thorny welts rose like cruel beads, dark at the center. Kara knelt beside him, fingers hovering but not touching. "Thorn spine," she murmured, bared his teeth. "Thorn spines do not strike without cause, so what cause did he give?" "He was on the east path," I said, flipping my diary open. "He went to find the missing hunters." Brannock's gaze snapped to me. "And he found what? A thorn-backed guardian? A mire trick?" Kara's calm voice sharpened. "No mire. The venom signature is local, bitter, green, and fast, but these welts are scattered, not a clean strike." I leaned closer. The welts looked like a constellation, as if someone had pressed him against danger, and then pulled him away. "As if he brushed a nest?" I asked. "As if something wanted him marked," Kara said to Brannock. "A warning, not a kill." Brannock's paw slammed onto a table, rattling jars of dried herbs. Then we close the borders. No one leaves Stornhall Grove. No one enters. We cannot keep chasing ghosts while our people vanish. Closing borders will look like an accusation, I said before I could stop myself. To Duskfall, to Ithoron, to anyone watching. Brannock's eyes narrowed. You worry about watchers. I worry about bodies. Kara drew a slow breath. Brannock, listen. Thorn spines patrol our edges. If we claim they are the cause, the circle will turn on its own guardians. They are beasts, Brannock said. Useful beasts. Kara's stare held. They are part of the forest's will. If we blame them without proof, we poison trust. The wounded warden stirred, lips moving. We all leaned in. He whispered. Voice rough as bark. Cold in my teeth, the trees set it back. Brannock's fur rose along his arms. There. The forest speaks. It should not. I wrote the words down, then beneath them a line meant for later singing. When the grove repeats you, it is not always the grove. The ink looked too dark, like it had swallowed light. Outside, a thorn spine shrieked somewhere far off, and the sound made my skin prickle. Kara pressed a cloth to the warden's brow. It is venom, she said. But her eyes betrayed her. Fear lived there, quiet and stubborn, and it did not care how skilled her hands were. Chapter 3. Thistlebrand's Laughing Warning. 62 A.E. Dusk. Thistlebrand found us by not being there, and then suddenly being everywhere. One moment the path was empty. The next, leaves spun into a small whirlwind and laughter skipped between branches like a stone over water. Ledger Boy, Thorn Girl, Bear Wall, Thistlebrand sang. A face formed in a curtain of ivy, eyes bright as dew. Chasing pricks and poison, are we? Brannock's palm moved to the haft of his staff. Show yourself properly. Properly is boring, Thistlebrand replied, and the ivy face stuck out a tongue made of birch bark. Besides, you are all so serious. Serious people trip. Kara's patience was a practiced thing. We need guidance. Hunters are missing. Missing is a choice, Thistlebrand chirped. Or a push. Or a little nudge in the mind, like so. The spirit flicked a leaf, and it drifted in a spiral that made my eyes want to follow it forever. I blinked hard and forced my gaze to the dirt. Do not do that. Ah, Thistlebrand said. He resists. I like him. Brannock growled. Enough games. The laughter softened, though it did not vanish. Fine. Follow then. But if you step on my mushrooms, I will haunt your boots. We followed Thistlebrand off the main path, into a pocket of quiet, where the air felt tighter, as if the grove held its breath. A stone marker stood there, half buried, carved with the verdant circle's spiral root sigil. I had passed a dozen like it. This one looked wrong, in the way a familiar song sounds wrong when one note is bent. Kara crouched, tracing the carving with her nail. Scratches, she said. Fresh. And dye, I added, spotting dark residue in the grooves. Someone re-inked it. Thistlebrand perched on a branch that bent to hold nothing. Someone fixed what was not broken, the spirit said, voice suddenly older. Someone wants the roots to listen elsewhere. Brannock leaned in. This is sabotage. Thistlebrand's eyes glittered. Or art. Kara's gaze flicked to the surrounding trees. Why would anyone alter a leyline marker? To make feet wander, Thistlebrand answered, then laughed again like a bell dropped into water. To make minds drift. To make hunters walk in circles until they forget which way is home. I felt my throat tighten. You could have told us sooner. I did, Thistlebrand said lightly. In jokes, you did not listen. The spirit's laughter faded, and the leaves stilled. For the first time, the ivy face looked solemn. Someone wants you to chase teeth, Thistlebrand whispered, not hands. Brannock stared at the scratched sigil as if it had bitten him. Kara's mouth pressed into a line. I wrote the warning down and beside it, a note for my future self. If this becomes a verse, keep the laughter, let it sour on the tongue. My ink looked too thin to hold what I had heard. Chapter 4. Names in the Sapglass. 62 A.E. morning fog. We found the oak because the forest kept trying to turn us away. Every time we took a straight path, roots rose like lazy snakes, and stones shifted underfoot. Kara muttered a quiet right, palm to bark, asking permission. The trees relented, but they did not feel welcoming. It was not hostility. It was caution, like a door half closed. The hollow oak stood in a dip where mist pooled. Its trunk split open like a mouth, and inside, sap had hardened into clear amber glass. It clung to the inner walls in sheets, trapped bubbles suspended like tiny moons. Sap glass, Kara said, voice hushed. It forms when the tree seals a wound too quickly. Brannock sniffed. Or when someone forces it. I leaned closer, in the sap glass. Faint shadows moved. Not bodies. Echoes. Sound caught and held, as if the oak had swallowed a moment and refused to digest it. Fen had taught me that old trees remember. I had not believed it, until the glass spoke. A voice stuttered from within, broken by time. I heard my own words. Another voice, sharper, younger. Do not turn the lantern out. Then a third, low and wet with consonants that slid like mud. Hollowroot pays in secrets. Brannock's head snapped up. Mire tongue. Kara's hands froze mid-air. It could be an imitation. It is enough, Brannock said, and his temper came like thunder. Enough to know where to look. Duskfall stinks of tricks. I swallowed. The voice did sound like the border traders I had met. Those rare vinebound who came with herbs and careful smiles. But sapglass could hold lies as easily as truth if a lie was spoken near it. The oak did not judge. It only kept. I pressed my ear to the trunk. The whispers scraped my skin. Cold in my teeth. Kara's eyes closed briefly. When she opened them, they were tired. If we accuse the mire and we are wrong, we hand them a reason to become what we fear. Brannock stepped closer to the hollow, as if he could drag the voice out by force. If we do nothing, we look weak. Weakness invites raids. And certainty invites war, Kara shot back. The oak creaked. A new echo surfaced, faint but clear. Not mire, not mire. Brannock stared. What? The sapglass shimmered. The echo repeated, then broke apart into meaningless syllables, as if the memory itself had been jostled. I wrote every fragment down, even the ones that made no sense. My diary page filled with half-words and dread. And I hated how quickly my mind tried to arrange them into a tidy ballad. Evidence did not come in rhymes. It came in splinters. Kara touched the oak gently. The evidence is uncertain, she said, more to herself than to us. And yet people will hear only what they want. Brannock's voice dropped. Then we make them hear what they must. The fog thickened, and for a moment I could not tell whether the forest was hiding us or watching. Chapter 5. The Grove Worm's Refusal. 62 A.E. Night near the old fern basin. We camped beneath Fern's tallest sails. Brannock kept the fire low, a respectful ember. Kara mixed a paste of crushed herbs, testing it on a strip of cloth. She did not speak unless spoken to, as if words might be stolen and used against us. I could not sleep. The whispers in my head were not the forest's. They were mine, asking for a simple enemy. A mire raider. A rogue thornspine. A monster with a name that could be chased. I wanted an ending that snapped shut like a clasp. The ground shifted. At first I thought it was my imagination, but the moss rose in a slow wave. Bark-like scales emerged, layered with lichen and tiny flowers. A grove worm lifted itself from the forest floor, as if it had always been there, and we had only just learned to see it. Its eyes were deep green, patient and ancient. Its breath smelled of rain on stone. Brannock stood, staff ready, but he did not raise it. Kara stepped forward, palm open. Great one, she said, voice steady. We seek the lost. The grove worm's gaze moved to me. I felt pinned, not by threat, but by knowing. It knew what I wanted. It knew what I feared. It knew the shape of the story I was trying to force onto the grove. Guide us, Brannock said. Show us the path to the one who meddles with our ley lines. The worm's voice was not sound. It was a pressure in my chest, a thought shaped like words. Divided hearts walk crooked. Kara's jaw tightened. We are not divided. The grove worm blinked slowly. You are. One seeks truth. One seeks blame. One seeks a story that ends clean. My cheeks burned. I realized it meant me, and the shame was sharp because it was deserved. I opened my diary with clumsy hands. I confess, I said aloud, the words tasting like ash. Part of me wants a simple enemy. I want a point and be done. I hate that I want it. Brannock's shoulders sagged, just a fraction. Kara looked at me, and the anger I expected was not there, only sadness, as if she had been carrying that knowledge about me for days. Simple is how wars start, she said quietly. The grove worm lowered its head until its mossy mane brushed the ferns. When you can carry complexity without dropping it, I will carry you. Brannock exhaled through his nose. So we earn your help by being better. By being honest, the worm replied. It began to sink back into the earth, bark and moss swallowing its shape. Before it vanished, I reached out, fingers hovering above its scales. I did not touch. It felt like touching would be a promise I might fail. Wait, I whispered, how do we find them? The grove worm's last thought pressed into me like a seal. Follow what is too neat. Then it was gone, and the fern basin was only a basin again. The ember fire crackled, and my diary page trembled as I wrote. In the margin I drafted a refrain, then crossed it out. Some moments did not want music yet. Chapter 6. The False Trail of Hollow Root Smoke. 62 AE, Borderward. The scent came first. A thin ribbon of swamp, like wet ash and bruised mint, drifting through the clean green of Galdroan. Brannock caught it and grunted. Mire smoke. Kara did not look convinced. Or someone carrying mire herbs. We followed the scent to a fallen log bridging a narrow stream. On the far side, half hidden under dead leaves, lay a satchel. Its strap was braided reed, a style I had seen on Duskfall traders. Brannock snatched it up. There, proof. Kara held up a hand. Careful. He ignored her and slipped the clasp. Inside were bundles of rare herbs, dark and slick, wrapped in waxed leaf. Mire goods, no doubt. The smell intensified, making my eyes water. Too neat, I murmured, the grove worm's warning rising like a thorn under my tongue. Brannock glared. You think the mire planted it to be found? I think someone wants us to think the mire planted it, I said. Even as I spoke, I felt the pull of the easy conclusion. It would be so clean to carry this satchel into the circle ring and let anger do the rest. Kara's gaze sharpened. Leo, what do you sense? I hesitated, embarrassed by my own odd instincts. Then I lifted the satchel closer, not to smell, but to listen. The clasp, a carved bone toggle, hummed faintly. Not the hum of insects, the hum of a spell trying to be quiet. I hear an illusion, I said, and my voice shook. A thin one, like a veil laid over the scent. Brannock's anger flared. So you are saying the evidence is false? I am saying it is staged, Kara corrected, taking the satchel gently from him. She turned it in her hands, eyes narrowed. The herbs are real, the trail is not. Brannock's ears flattened. Then what are we chasing? Kara looked toward the trees. Someone inside our borders, someone who knows our fears and how to feed them. A twig snapped behind us. We spun, but saw only ferns and shadow. The forest was too quiet, as if holding its breath. Show yourself, Brannock barked. No answer. Only the stream's soft run and the satchel's faint hum, like a guilty throat clearing. I wrote quickly, ink smearing on my thumb. I did not name the satchel a trick in my entry. I described it. Let the reader decide. That was the discipline Fenn had asked for, and it felt like swallowing a stone. Kara tied the satchel closed again. We take it back, she said. We do not wave it like a banner. Not yet. Brannock's voice was low. If this turns into a border fight, it will not matter who started it. That is why we must be precise, Kara said. Precision is mercy. The forest remained silent, but I could feel it listening, waiting to see if we would choose the easy path. Chapter 7. The Hidden Hand at the Leyline Node. 62 AE. 3 nights later. We returned to the leyline marker Thistlebrand had shown us, moving like thieves through our own sacred paths. Brannock hated it. I could tell by the way his paws clenched and unclenched around his staff, as if he wanted the grove to see him standing openly, not crouched in shadow. I guard, he muttered. I do not skulk. You do tonight, Kara replied, or we lose our chance. We hid in a thicket of silver leaf. The leaves reflected moonlight in dull flashes, making the world look like it was breathing metal. I held my diary closed, afraid the scratch of my pen would give us away. My mind kept trying to turn the waiting into verse, to make the silence feel purposeful. It was only waiting. It was only fear. Hours passed. The lantern moths dimmed. My knees cramped. Then a figure appeared, cloaked in dark green, hood pulled low. They moved with the confidence of someone who knew the grove's blind spots. They knelt at the marker and drew out a small chisel. Kara's hand tightened on my wrist. Watch. The figure etched guiding runes into the stone, not the circle's spiral route, but something adjacent. A subtle rerouting, like changing one word in a vowel and pretending the vowel still meant the same. Brannock surged forward with a growl, but Kara held him back a heartbeat longer. The figure whispered, and the air shimmered. My thoughts slid for a moment, wanting to forget why I was there. Not a command, not a theft of will, more like a fog laid over a path sign, making the next step feel obvious, even when it was wrong. Kara hissed a counter-right under her breath. The shimmer snapped, and the knight returned sharp as a snapped twig. Now, she said. Brannock burst from the thicket. Circleborn, he roared. Hands where I can see them. The cloaked figure jolted, chisel clattering. They tried to run, but Kara stepped into their path like a shadow made solid. Stop, she commanded. The figure froze, then slowly pushed back the hood. A novice, barely older than me. Their hair was braided with the circle's green thread, their cheeks streaked with sap ash. Their eyes were wide and wet with terror. The kind that makes a person look both guilty and heartbreakingly young. Brannock's anger faltered into disbelief. You? The novice's voice cracked. I had to. No one listens unless there is danger. Kara's expression was a storm held behind a wall. You redirected the node. You planted the mire herbs. I wanted them to close the borders, the novice whispered, to take the forest seriously. To stop letting outsiders wander and take what they want. Hunters vanished, I said, stepping forward despite my fear. People suffered. The novice pleaded, I did not hurt them. I only guided them, made the paths bend, made the trees repeat words so they would be afraid and stay close. Brannock's paw lifted, trembling with the urge to strike and the duty not to. You played with minds, the novice flinched. I played with rumor. Rumor is already everywhere. Kara's voice went quiet. Rumor is a fire. You do not get to choose what it burns. Brannock looked at Kara, then at the novice. His next choice would echo through Thornhall Grove. Punishment would satisfy fear. Mercy might invite repetition. And my ink, I realized, could become either a torch or a salve, depending on how I shaped it later. I opened my diary, ready to write the moment that decided what kind of circle we were. Chapter 8. Venom as Medicine, Fear as Poison. 62 AE, Dawn. We brought the novice to Kara's work shelter, a place of hanging herbs and stone bowls stained green. The novice sat on a low stool, wrists bound with soft vine that tightened only if they struggled. Brannock stood by the door like an unmovable verdict, watching the novice as if watching a crack in a dam. Kara set a bowl between them, Inside, a pale paste glistened. "Thornspine venom," she said. The novice recoiled. "You will poison me?" "No," Kara replied. "I will teach you what poison is." She dipped a finger into the paste and smeared a dot onto her own wrist. I gasped. Brannock's eyes widened, and for a moment his anger looked like fear for her. Kara did not flinch. She waited, breathing evenly. After a moment, she took a second bowl and poured in clear sap water, mixing it with a pinch of crushed root. "The venom in the right measure becomes medicine," she said, and offered her wrist for me to see. The dot was already fading. "It draws out fever, it breaks swelling, it can save a life." Brannock's voice was rough. "And in the wrong measure?" Kara looked at the novice. "In the wrong measure, it makes the body fight itself." The novice swallowed. "I did not mean to harm." "You meant to control," Kara said, and the words landed without shouting. That was worse. Shouting could be dismissed as temper. This was judgment. I leaned forward. "Where are the missing hunters?" The novice's shoulder sagged. "In a sleep thicket? I redirected them there. The node fogged their sense of direction and dulled their urgency, so they would not panic and run deeper. I thought they would wake after a day and come back grateful." Brannock's claws flexed. "Grateful?" Kara's gaze cut like a clean blade. "You used guiding runes meant for lost children on grown hunters. You turned the forest into a trap." The novice's eyes filled. "I wanted to prove a point. That we need stricter control, that the circle must be feared a little, or no one will respect it." Kara's face softened, just enough to hurt. "Respect built on fear rots. It does not root." Silence pressed in. I realized Kara was trembling, not with rage, but with choice. If she exposed the novice fully, trust in the verdant circle could fracture. If she softened it, the novice might do it again, or someone else might learn the lesson that sabotage could be forgiven quietly. "I will not lie," Kara said finally. "But I will not let rumor turn this into a purge." Brannock frowned. "You would shield them?" "I would shield the circle from its own hunger for an easy villain," Kara answered. "We will retrieve the hunters, we will repair the node, and we will bring this to Fen with a full record." She looked at me. "Leo, your diary matters now. Write cleanly. No embellishment, no mercy in the ink, and no cruelty either." I thought of the songs I had wanted to craft. The tidy endings. "I will," the novice whispered. "Will they exile me?" Brannock's answer was immediate. "They should." Kara's was slower. "They will decide, and you will live with what you made the forest do." Outside, the morning birds began to sing, unaware of how close we had come to turning on one another. Chapter 9. Trial Beneath Root and Bough. 62 A.E. 2 days later. The hearing was held beneath living branches, as tradition demanded. The circle gathered in a ring where roots rose like seats from the earth. Lantern moths floated overhead, their glow soft, refusing drama. Even the grove seemed to insist on quiet, as if loudness would make the truth brittle. Archdruid Fen Mossbark stood at the center, staff planted in loam. His voice carried without force. "We are here to keep truth from becoming a weapon." I sat at the edge with my diary open, ink ready. My hand ached from the weight of responsibility, more than from writing. I had performed in halls where applause felt like power. This felt like the opposite, power as restraint. The novice knelt before Fen, head bowed. Kara stood to one side, Brannock to the other. Thistlebrand hovered above, formed from a swirl of leaves that did not laugh. Fen looked at me. "Ledger keeper, read your record." My mouth went dry, but I obeyed. I read the whispers, the sapglass echoes, the staged satchel with its illusion hum, the runes etched at the leyline marker, the confession of the sleep thicket. I kept my voice steady and plain, as if I were reading a list of herbs. The plainness made it worse. The grove could not hide behind theatrics. When I finished, the circle held a long silence. Brannock stepped forward. "This was treachery. If we do not make an example, others will do the same." Kara's voice was steady. "If we make a spectacle, we teach fear to feed on us. The novice is guilty, but exile will not heal what was broken. Thistlebrand drifted lower, leaves rustling like a sigh. I made jokes, the spirit said, and the words sounded like an apology. I thought you would listen sooner. I will not laugh now. Fen's gaze rested on the novice. Why? The novice spoke through tears. Because I was afraid, because the border disputes with the Mire make everyone tense. Because my brother was turned back at the East Path last season, and called a traitor for trading herbs with Duskfall. No one asked what he was trying to heal. They only saw the border and the blame. I thought if the circle looked strong, if the grove closed in, no one would have to be accused again. A murmur ran through the circle. Not forgiveness. Not condemnation. Recognition, which is its own kind of pain. Fen's antlers dipped slightly. Strength is not making others small. Thistlebrand's voice sharpened. Accountability, the spirit demanded. Not just sorrow. Not just a sad story. Fen nodded. Yes, he turned to Brannock. Rootcaller, what sentence would keep the grove safe without feeding our worst instincts? Brannock's jaw worked. I saw the battle in him, the desire for clean punishment against the duty to protect the grove's future. Restoration work, he said at last, as if the words cost him. Under supervision. No access to leyline markers. No solitary rites. Kara exhaled softly, relief and worry entwined. And service to the hunters they misled. Fen lifted his staff. So it will be. The novice will repair what they bent. They will be watched. They will learn the weight of guidance. The novice sobbed, not in escape, but in acceptance. I wrote every word. In that moment my diary was not a story. It was a shield against rumor's teeth, and a promise that when I later shaped this into a bard's lay, I would not sharpen it into a blade. Chapter 10. The ledger closes, the forest breathes. 62 AE, a week later. We repaired the leyline marker at dawn, when the forest's breath is slowest. Kara led the rite, with hands stained green from crushed leaf and sap. Brannock stood guard, not against enemies, but against interruption. Thistlebrand watched from a branch, quieter than I had ever seen the spirit, as if silence were a penance. The novice worked too, under Kara's direction. They scrubbed away the false runes with a stone that sang softly against the marker. Each scrape sounded like an apology being made physical, and each pause looked like the novice fighting the urge to rush. They had rushed before. Rushing had been the harm. Kara placed her palm on the spiral root sigil. Only within this grove, she murmured, careful as a healer measuring venom. Only what was bent, straightened. No reaching beyond our roots. The air shifted. Not a grand surge, not a world-changing wave. Just a small settling, like a knot loosening in a muscle. The path beside the marker seemed to align itself, as if it had been squinting and could finally see. Brannock grunted. Feels right. Thistlebrand sniffed. It feels less wrong, the spirit corrected, and then almost shyly added, good work, Thorn Girl. Kara's mouth twitched. Do not get used to praising me. We found the hunters in the sleep thicket by midday. They lay among soft fern beds, breathing slow. When Kara spoke a waking charm, they stirred like people rising from heavy dreams. One hunter, a young woman with a braid full of feathers, sat up and pressed a hand to her temple. My head, she groaned. What happened? You were misled, Kara said gently. You are safe. Brannock offered water. The hunter drank and blinked at him. I remember the trees repeating me, like mockery. I watched Kara's face, waiting for her to soften truth. She did not. She chose measured truth, the kind that does not hide, but does not inflame. A circle novice tampered with a marker, Kara said. They have confessed. They will restore what they harmed. The hunter's eyes widened, then narrowed. One of ours? One of ours, Brannock confirmed, voice grim. And that is why we must be vigilant, without becoming cruel. That evening I returned to Thornhall Grove and sat beneath the green lanterns, where my diary had begun. The forest whispered again, but now it sounded like wind in leaves, not stolen voices. I found myself listening anyway, not for secrets, but for the grove's ordinary breath. Ordinary, I learned, is a blessing you only notice after it is threatened. Borders remained tense. The mire was still the mire. Our disputes did not vanish like mist, but the central knot had been untied, and the grove had not torn itself apart to do it. I wrote my last line with steady ink, and beneath it, a note for the song I might someday perform in a hall that had never smelled Thornhall rain. Sing it softly. Let the refrain be restraint. The innocent were cleared. The whispers were planted. And the grove chose truth that could be carried, not blame that could be thrown. Then I closed the ledger, and the forest breathed with me. You have been listening to A Tale of Alarion, part of StoryOmniverse.com. May its echoes linger until the next legend is told.